Well, we've been talking for the last several weeks about this theme, No Outsiders, and we began our series several weeks ago talking about how there is a narrative, there's a storyline that goes through the whole Bible about insiders and outsiders. And what's kind of unique about the Bible is that whenever the Bible talks about insiders, the Bible actually refers to how they never quite get what God's up to in this world. It's the insiders who are always falling asleep on Jesus. They're the ones who know better and yet they worship other gods. Well, when the Bible talks about outsiders, the Bible is always pointing to them as the ones who are a whole lot more compassionate to what God is up to. It's the outsiders who somehow get it. It's the outsiders who are the examples of faith. And we might ask, well, why is that? Well, I think God wanted to make clear to us that there are absolutely no outsiders to God's love. We talked about that on the first week of this series. The next week, Pastor Nathan shared a message where he sort of challenged us. Are we a church that's going to be a kind of a clubhouse for insiders? Or are we going to stretch out and open our doors and be welcoming and create ministries that really welcome outsiders? And then last week, we talked about how every one of us has a story we tell ourselves about ourselves. And usually that story is kind of ugly. We tell a story to ourselves about ourselves that always excludes us from considering ourselves an insider around this group or that group. And we talked about how we have a God who says that story you tell yourself that's ugly, it's just not true. Well, today we're going to continue in this series, and here's the deal. I think we all have outsiders in our lives that God is trying to convince us we've mislabeled, that we've mistakenly identified. And to get into this, I want to tell a couple of mistaken identity stories. When I was in my 20s, I dated a girl. I had a girlfriend. I know that's hard for some of you to believe. But I dated this girl, and her family invited us to celebrate Christmas with their family. And so we went to their house, and we had Christmas dinner, and then we went by around the Christmas tree. We played some board games, and then we started opening presents. And it was this, like, fuzzy, warm, sort of wonderful, idyllic Christmas moment. I remember sitting around the tree, and I was sitting there, and I was looking across as somebody opened their presents. And that's when I was feeling just kind of warm and fuzzy inside. I reached over and I put my hand on the knee of my girlfriend. The problem was I instantly realized it wasn't my girlfriend sitting next to me, it was her mom. Yeah. I don't know who was more shocked, me or her. But it was a case of mistaken identity, you might say. Katie and I had the privilege, my wife and I had the privilege of receiving scholarships to study one summer while we were preparing to be to work in the church to study in Germany. We flew over to Germany. It was just this huge privilege. I think they felt sorry for us and so gave us some scholarships, or maybe they wanted to get us away from the seminary. I don't know what it was. But we went to Germany for the summer, and we were in this language school where there were students from all over the world. Sitting next to me, I remember the second day of class, was a woman from Mexico, a guy from Italy, a guy from Japan. And just as class was about to start, two blonde, blue-eyed students came barging into the classroom, and they were yelling my name in kind of a Norwegian accent. "Hans! Hans! Where's Hans Dahl?" they were yelling. And I kind of sheepishly went, "That's me." I had no idea who they were or what they wanted. They darted across the room, and they got in my face, and they were smiling from ear to ear. And in what I later figured out was Norwegian, they were jabbering at me nonstop. And I came to find out that they were two students from Norway who were very lonely at this school. And they saw the list of students in the class, and they saw this guy named Hans Dahl, and they assumed that anyone with the name Hans Dahl must be from Norway. You see, it was a case of mistaken identity. You see, here's what I want to suggest today, that we all have our own moments where we mistake the identity of someone or a group of people. We have this way of writing stories, creating stories within us about different groups of people or different types of people. And some of that comes from our upbringing. Some comes from the places we've lived or the experiences we've had. For example, growing up, my family, we stereotyped certain types of people. For example, in our family, my dad taught me, no offense if you are a car salesman, but my dad taught me that used car salesmen are always going to rip you off. That's what my dad taught me. In fact, there was a joke that went with that. Did you hear about the woman who married a used car salesman? Did you hear about this? She got this beautiful ring, and she was showing it off at her office, and she said, "Isn't it fabulous? He sold it to me." Sorry, that's bad. Or bankers. Sorry if you're a banker, but in my family, we had these stereotypes of bankers. Bankers were always frugal. They were always tight. It's sort of like that story about the banker who got a suit tailored. Did you hear this story? He went to try it on, and he put his hands like this, and he realized there were no pockets in the jacket of this suit he had tailored. And he said to the tailor, "Well, where are the pockets?" And the tailor said, "Well, I've never seen a banker with his hands in his own pockets." Sorry. Or we could go on to chiropractors. Our family had stories we told about chiropractors. How many chiropractors does it take to change a light bulb? One, but it's going to take 8 to 12 visits. And pastors, of course, there are all kinds of stories about how pastors are so boring. In fact, an oil man was talking to a pastor about his sermons. And he said to that pastor, "You know, after 15 minutes of drilling, stop boring." That was his thing. Isn't that bad? Or there was a terribly boring pastor who was a pastor of a church. He'd go on and on. And one Sunday he came up front and he said to the congregation, "Congregation, this is my last Sunday with you. Jesus has called me to another church." And that's when the whole congregation stood up and began singing, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." Sorry. Oh, man, those are terrible. You see, here's the deal. You know as well as I do that we do this. We put whole groups of people in boxes. And we do this. We tell stories about them inside our heads. We label them. We make judgments about them. We put them in boxes. There are those people in the city. Those city folk, they don't care about community. They're always on the go. All they care about is their Starbucks lattes and their skinny jeans. Huh? And if they're not that type of city folk, they're thugs who live in the inner city. When my family, we moved to the cities for a period of time, I remember my relatives coming up to me and they kind of came around me and they said, "Hans, why in the world are you doing this? Why would you ever move to the city? Why would you ever move to Murderapolis?" they said. But of course, people in the city have their impressions of what people out in the rural areas are like. That they're sort of sheltered. That people out in rural areas, they move at such a slower pace. They're so conservative. When I moved out of the city, I remember colleagues of mine saying, "I can't believe you're doing this. What do you think you're doing moving out of the city?" It was as though I think they thought that I was going to live in a sod hut with no running water out here. We do this. We make generalizations. Oh, there are those Republicans. Those Republicans that only care about money. They love war. They love guns. Anyone from another country has got to be a terrorist. And then, of course, there are those tree-hugger liberal Democrats. You know, all they do is spend. They've never balanced a budget in their life. We do this, don't we? There are those Catholics. I grew up with stereotypes of Catholics and their weird infatuation with fish and the rosary, that toy they play with. I don't get it. They worship Mary more than Jesus. Those Baptists, those Pentecostals and their hand-raising holy rollerness. People from the South, we have stereotypes of them. They talk funny. They're a little slow. They all watch Duck Dynasty. You see, don't we do this? We have these stereotypes. We put people in boxes. Well, here's the deal. I think it was the same way back in Jesus' day. Jesus tells a story about a guy that the Bible calls a centurion. And he was an official in the Roman army. He was a higher up. He had hundreds of men under him. He had a lot of authority and he had a lot of power. And Jesus tells a story about him. He's in his hometown, and all his friends and family there in Capernaum are gathered around. And here's what those friends and family know. They know they've got this centurion figured out, this Roman. They've put him in a box. The story goes like this. It comes from Matthew chapter 8. When Jesus had entered Capernaum, which was the town he lived in as an adult, it says a centurion came to help, or came to him asking him for help. Now, a couple things about this. First off, everybody knew that a centurion would have been labeled a Gentile. In the Bible talks about Israelites and Gentiles. If you did not practice the faith of the Israelite people, you were considered a Gentile. And anytime the Bible says Gentile, you may as well replace it with the word outsider. If you didn't practice the faith of those Israelites, if you didn't follow the rules, you were an abomination. You were to steer clear of Gentiles. This centurion was a Gentile. And not only that, he was an official in the Roman army. He reported to Caesar. And Caesar and the Roman army, they ruled over all of the Middle East. And they ruled with an iron fist. It was the Roman army that would put up crosses at major thoroughfares throughout the Middle East. And on those crosses, they would hang the bodies of anyone who challenged the power of the empire. They were ruthless in their rule over the people. This guy was an outsider of all outsiders. But here's what's astonishing. In the story, it says that this centurion was coming to Jesus asking for help. This outsider who had all the power in the world was coming to lowly Jesus and asking for help. Well, the story goes on and it says this. The centurion said to Jesus, "Lord," he said, "my servant lies at home paralyzed, suffering terribly." Jesus said to him, "Shall I come and heal him?" You see, when all his friends and family there in Capernaum would have heard this, they would have said, "What are you doing, Jesus? Have you lost your mind? Do you know who this guy is? He's one of them. If there is an outsider, he is a poster child for outsiders. Jesus, you are fraternizing with the enemy. This guy doesn't deserve what you can give him." And the man seems, this centurion, seems to understand his position because he says this. The centurion replied, "Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and that one, come, and he comes. And I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." You see, this Roman seems to say to Jesus, "Jesus, I'm a man with authority. And I get that authority from my higher ups. And Jesus, I know the same is true for you. You have more power than I can ever imagine, and your power comes from above as well. So all you need to do is snap your finger and my friend will be healed." And I imagine all those friends in Capernaum, they said, "You can't be trusting this guy. He's lying. We know these people." But the story goes on. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed and said to those around him, all his friends there in Capernaum, "Truly I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith." He says, "Folks, I know you've put him in a box. I know you think you know all these Romans. But let me tell you, I haven't seen the kind of faith I see in this man in any of you." And with that, they would have been stunned. You see, here's the thing I think. We all have outsiders that I think God is trying to convince us we've mislabeled. I grew up in a small town. Anybody else grew up in a small town? I mean a real small town, right? And it was a stereotypical small town in North Dakota. Agriculture kind of ruled the roost in that small town. And every summer, there was a group of people from Mexico that made their way up to that small town and worked in all the fields. And I'm not proud to admit the nasty things we said about those migrant workers who brought their whole families up from Mexico to work hard, long days in the fields doing work that we lazy high school kids would never consider even doing. I'm not proud of the things I said way back when. I also think of the nasty things that I said as a kid about people who may have been gay or lesbian. I said terrible things, and I'm not proud of it. It came from my upbringing. It wasn't until I was in college and one of my friends shared with me that he was gay that I changed my ways and I learned how wrong I was. You see, for some of us, this has been going on all our life, that God has been trying to convince us that those people we've labeled as outsiders, we've mislabeled them. I don't know who that might be for you, if that's the poor, if that's the wealthy, if that's people from rural areas, people from city areas. I don't know who that might be for you. But you know as well as I that you have a group of people you, like me, have labeled as outsiders. You see, I believe we have a God who knows those people we've labeled as outsiders, and God's trying to convince us. And for some of us, God's been working on us for a long time. God's trying to convince us that we've mislabeled that group. Today, as you walked in, you got your bulletin, and on that bulletin is a sticky note. I want you to take that sticky note out. And I want you to find a pencil or a pen or some writing utensil or prick your finger and write in blood, whatever it takes. Here's what we're going to do. I know you are like me, that we all have a group that we have labeled outsiders in our own lives. And I don't want you to look at what anybody else writes. I want you to just look at your sticky note. I want you to write down for you, who is that group? Or maybe if you're as honest as I am, you have lots of groups you've labeled. Can you write down one of those groups right now? We're going to take just a minute to do that here. Write it down. Don't look at your neighbors. Just look at yours. All right. So here's what we're going to do. In just a few minutes, we're going to celebrate communion. And as you come up for communion, we've got these boards up here. And last night in worship, the crew put up all their sticky notes. And so what we're going to do is we're going to turn these around. And so as you come up for worship or for communion, I'm going to invite you to just walk behind, put yours up on the board, and then we'll serve communion off to either of the sides. These boards remind us that there are no outsiders to God's love, and that we're all kind of a work in progress. We're going to display these around the church to remind us that every one of us has a group of outsiders that God is trying to convince us we've mislabeled. It was true way back when with those Israelites, and it's just as true for us. Would you let me pray for you? Gracious God, you know each one of us have labeled a certain group of people, or maybe multiple groups of people, outsiders in our own lives. God, remind us that you're working on us, that each one of us is a work in progress, that you're working trying to convince us that we've mislabeled those folks. And so, God, remind us, wherever we go, whatever we do, that there are absolutely no outsiders to your love. Amen.